Welcome, movie fans. We are David and Kim from ThatMomentIn.com. And up next, our review of In Your Eyes. In Your Eyes is a 2014 drama about a young man and woman hundreds of miles apart who are mysteriously connected, allowing them to see, smell, and touch what the other's experiencing. This is a really interesting film, Kim. You recommended it to me, and what really drew it to me, or what drew to me right away, was we spoke a little bit off camera, was the writer. Joss Whedon wrote this movie, and you know, if I had watched this movie, I would have never have made that connection that he was the writer of this film.
I have to say that because Joss Whedon, I don't know, somehow Joss Whedon makes me feel like he's gonna always have something really twisted at the end. And I kept expecting that, you know, if these characters do meet, that something horrible was gonna happen. And that was like something that nagged at me the whole time, and it kind of like stopped me from wanting to like the characters as much, so that I wouldn't be like torn and destroyed at the end.
I agree. If I hadn't known he was behind it, I probably would have just let it play out as it does, really, because it doesn't really do anything that's Joss Whedon-esque except for maybe a little bit of the telekinesis, but it doesn't really have any of the tropes, I guess, of what he's become now. But the story is remarkably simple. It's just these two people, two young people who are connected. It's just telekinetic. It's a vision. It's smells. It's touch. It's everything. But they can't communicate by thought, right? It's only they have to actually physically talk so they can hear each other, even though they're hundreds of miles apart. I thought that was pretty intriguing. But there is no explanation for what happened. And before we get going, you know, this is a thing that's happened a few times in movies successfully. I think most notably probably Groundhog Day, right? There's a magical element happens that has no real explanation in the film. Were you disappointed or frustrated, or did that even come up to you about there being no explanation for what was happening to them?
You know, it's kind of like The Lake House. Do you need an explanation? The point of the movie is a romance, you know, it's a sci-fi romance. You're not supposed to need it. I think that, like, In Your Eyes is truly targeted. It's not really for your sci-fi fans, but it attracts the sci-fi fans, which normally wouldn't watch romance movies.
Right.
Like, I love romance movies. I just sometimes think dramas are really, like, most dramas, romance dramas, are way overboard. Like, they go over dramatic. And what In Your Eyes works is in the fact that it really focuses onto these two people and the lives that they're living in. And you don't need to have these, like, kind of don't really need those sexual connotations either.
Right.
Because they're really, like, it's really focusing on communication. They learn so much just by learning from each other and from, you know, this. They both live in a trapped world, you know, in a different sense, where they live in a trapped life, where they're just, you know, plagued by their past, and they're, you know, they can't seem to move forward, they can't seem to break out of this pattern, and you get to learn these characters by just the way they talk, and just the things they like, and the way they react to situations as they give each other strength.
Yeah, that's a good point about being trapped. They are both he comes from, he's an ex-con, not a bad criminal, just a light ex-con. He's just out of jail, and he's got a relationship with his parole officer, and now he's just trying to get himself back on track, but he can't really escape the past as some friends of his who are criminals kind of want him to get back into it. And she is married to a very successful doctor who kind of treats her like a child, and doesn't really, I mean, he's just very emotionally unavailable to her and kind of is condescending to her. So they both feel like they're kind of stuck in a rut, like you say. The thing that my feelings watching this through, and there was a lot of, I had some issues, and there were some unexplored areas, and then there was areas that went on for too long. And you're right, it is not a sci-fi film, but it's strictly about the romance. And it felt to me like, I didn't look it up, but do you know, was this meant to be like a pilot for a series, a TV series, and they just cobbled together in a finished film? Or is this an actual one-shot film?
I think it's just a one-shot film.
Oh, really?
I mean, it works as a one-shot film. I mean, honestly, if they did in Your Eyes 2, I'd be interested in seeing it because I do like it.
Mm.
But I think that them, you know, I don't want to spoil the ending, but it's kind of there. Is spoiler alert? Is that they finally meet?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was inevitable. The thing was that, you know, because they finally met, I think that that was enough. What did they have to finally meet? Maybe not. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it gave some action and some faster pace kind of like feeling that they really needed each other and that they were. I think the point of it was really that it was to give is to show that they both had the power and the strength and the courage to escape their past.
Yeah.
Figuratively and literally.
Yeah,
you know?
I can see that. Yeah, I
you know,
can definitely
and,
see
and
that.
It was kind of like what they needed to push each other. Like they needed each other. I guess the underlying message was that you can find something more in someone like you can find courage in someone else kind of thing.
Yeah.
That'll give courage to you.
That said, I'm not sold on the presentation of it. There were some issues that I had with. First of all, I think, okay, so we have the two characters. Dylan is played by Michael Stahl David, and Rebecca is played by Zoe Kazan. And they're very likable actors. They're very likable and charismatic characters. That's really not the problem. But I was really. Let's just start with Zoe or Rebecca. She's married to this guy named Philip. He's played by Mark Forstein. And. You know, he's a cardboard cutout of a cliched, you know, one-dimensional bad guy. I mean, he doesn't care about her like he should. He uses her. He doesn't, you know, he misunderstands her. And it made it so easy for us to be like, oh, well, of course we want her to be away from him and try to find Dylan. And I, all the time I was thinking about, wouldn't this film be better if he actually was a nice guy or a good guy and trying to understand what was happening? But it just made him a bad guy. So it felt like it was like, okay, so see why she needs to be away. And I understand you're gonna tell me, well, she was trapped. But, you know, that's been done. What if she wasn't trapped and this had happened?
Then that would make it morally unacceptable, and people would hate Zoe for who she was.
Right.
And yeah, but that's not the point of. I think that wasn't the point. I'm gonna fight you on many of these things. I do get what you're saying. I get, but the thing is that I feel that romance is a very one-dimensional film style.
Right.
There isn't a lot of like sometimes I hate to say this because I do like romance a lot and. The deal with romance is that I always am a little bit more forgiving just because the fact that I find that it's really focused on the charisma between the two characters that they need to find. And this film does a fantastic job about it and doesn't get too mushy, you know, like it doesn't go into the romantic comedy. You know, they put in these comedic moments to kind of like just soothe the tone and but it's a drama, it's not a comedy, it wouldn't be categorized as a comedy
maybe.
But the thing is I do understand what you mean by Phil. I've really dragged it on far away from that, but Phil is a very one-dimensional character. He is the definition of a jerk husband.
Yeah,
like you don't want this husband ever. But the point is that in this whole thing it really brings out how weak as a character, as like character that Becky really is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she it explains why she's with Philip.
Yeah.
You know, like
right.
At a certain point, which is one of my favorite scenes of the entire movie, is that she really shows why she chose this man when, you know, she could have had other choices. But, you know, I'm not. The thing with Zoe's character, I think, that I don't like the writing of is that they make her into a very... I see past this, but I can see that this is kind of something that really shows abused women. And, like, women are always shown in these roles of abuse where they're always weaker because they're emotionally abused by someone. They're not just weak in nature and they have to be stronger, you know? And I don't really like that aspect because I find that, you know, it's okay to do that, but that could be a whole new discussion of like thousands of people to do that. But I mean, the point is like, Zoe is a weaker character and her husband brings that out in her. Yes, it makes us want her to be with Dylan so much more because Dylan listens to her, you know, just listens to her, understands her. Let's not, like, I don't even want to talk about, like, I guess it's just the fact that Dylan kind of brings something new to her life in her mundane, boring housewife life that she has, you know?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I am sold on what you said about them being really charismatic characters. Definitely sold on that. I can forgive, I guess, the Philip character. I'm just trying to say that it probably would have been a more interesting film to me. But as a romance movie, I also concede that it has to have, you know, some parts that just I can't get away from. And this is why I brought up about that comedic part and getting into these lighthearted moments. And now we have to understand that the movie presents them as being able to see literally what the other person is seeing, and they show it sort of like this layered effect where you're seeing what, like, so if Dylan is looking out and seeing traffic, he can also see what Zoe's seeing when she's in her house. And so it's kind of layered. He can see the traffic and he can see the house. It's kind of blurry a little bit. And we can hear, and we know that they can hear each other. And I'm thinking, Kim, that they were actually able to tune each other out at some point because they, like, sometimes they're saying, are you there? Are you there? So I think there's a way they can tune each other out.
This telekinetic thing that they have is really like, They can shut each other off if they want to.
Right.
And that's one of the reasons why, how it explains why they haven't hurt each other since they were a child.
Right, right.
Like, they haven't connected because they were able to shut that part of their brain off for whatever reason, you know?
Right,
Whether it was just because they just weren't open to something else, or maybe it was just, you know, this thing is so instinctive that it opened up the channel to both of them again because they really needed each other. And I think that was just really like a timing thing, you know?
Yeah. Wasn't it Dylan who said he thought that she was an imaginary friend when he was a kid, right? Cause he could actually see what she was doing, but he didn't really think it was real. But now he understands that it is. Things that bothered me about it a lot mm-hmm. was how the film portrayed them in public, openly having these conversations. And you're already laughing. You know what I'm talking about. There are numerous occasions throughout the film where out in public, like, Dylan will be like, he's working at his job and he's openly talking to himself in front of other people who are looking at him like he's a crazy person, which I can completely understand. And she as well is just like staring off into space in public. And then worse so, which I really found, I gotta say, it really bothered me, the way that they overreacted to things that were happening to the other person. So, like, if somebody was tripping or you know, holding something hot or whatever, they reacted to it in such a way that was so outrageous that they would knock things down or fall off chairs and people would be like, what is wrong with them? And I understand what they were going for, but I honestly felt it was overdone and a little uncomfortable. I just did not like it. Actually took me out of the story.
Really?
Yeah.
I actually thought that those were pretty funny moments. Oh. in because they explain it in a way where it's just because they can feel the pain. Right. They can feel it pretty like they're there, you know? And they use that in a really great example at the beginning of the movie as to how they can feel each other, because they just, you know, when they most unexpected these things happen, you know, and I think the fact that it kept going on and you know that they can control whether they can switch someone off or not is the fact that they've become more and more involved into each other's lives. And they've kind of lost touch in their reality.
Right.
And I think that's what that part is trying to do, where I know what part you're talking about. Like, she's like hot in the sink, in the sink, you know, she's yelling and she's at this public affair and she always does this. And it's kind of like she's really breaking away from her reality. It's that she doesn't care about, she doesn't care about the reality she's in anymore. She's more absorbed with learning about this new person. And, you know, she's starting to be really like into Dylan's life
to
forget about her own, you know, her own boring, you know, dinner parties just go to for with Phil and all that stuff, you know?
Yeah. And Dylan likewise, pretty much abandons any logic. If you're trying to impress a date so he's obviously attracted to Rebecca, even though he can't be with her at this point. He's trying to impress a date by cooking for her, and he's just openly talking in the other room to Rebecca, and you're just thinking, where are the social filters here at all? Why would he even do that? I mean, even if he has no interest in her, why would he set himself up to be like that? And I understand that the premise of the film is to do that and to make this connection and be a little bit comedic in that. But it really detracted from the film for me. I couldn't take it.
Well, I mean, I think at a certain point there has to be, I think that for films, there has to be some sort of, particularly romantic films, there has to be a part where you let go a little bit of logic.
Right.
A lot of romance films are like that. They're contrived. They're manipulative. Mm-hmm. They're, you know, they really try to use chemistry to overcome a lot of things. And it is true. I've watched this movie so many times. I don't even want to tell you how many. And I'm going to lie if I didn't recommend it to you just to give myself an excuse to watch it another time. Or maybe three more, because I did watch it a lot. But I do see the faults in it a lot. I do see where you're not getting the logic in it. I just thought that those were really fun moments where it really helped. For me, it helped the movie kind of have these comedic moments and really show that they were getting more and more into each other, where they really wanted to escape, like I said, the reality. I don't want to repeat it over and over again.
I get that.
You know, and I know that, you know, you can probably see that, and that might be actually a hurdle that they go through. But there are things that, you know, really don't make sense. Like, I mean, her husband is, you know, her husband is like, you know, if it was, say, just the first time she does this, you know, and she's pretending to be on the phone with a girlfriend,
right,
you know.
Right, I know you're talking
about. But you don't see, you have these fancy phones. Your phone would be lit up and you'd see that it was on. And he doesn't see that, to not see that. It really shows that, you know, there's a part of the people around them that really block out these two people. And they're very isolated. And there's a lot of people who don't really care about them. And that's why they can get away from all of these things until, until I think the part I couldn't get by was the fact that, you know, I get gossipy friends and gossipy circle that you're in. But I don't get the fact that, you know, people didn't, you know, talk about her having an affair or something. But the link of it was that, right away she talks about, you know, if someone says, are you seeing someone?
Right.
It's like, well, I obviously, if you're asking me if I'm seeing someone, you think I'm having an affair.
Exactly,
but they were thinking,
right,
are you seeing someone as a psychiatrist?
Right,
you know,
right.
And then they twist it apart and then they, you know what's going to happen after
exactly.
that. You know, but it's just, you know, it's these things, you know, there are these little things where I feel that, yes, it's a little bit, I think they stretch it a little too far in the villainous characters. It's like you said, it does make it seem like it's a little bit one-dimensional. I think that that's a really good word to describe them. But at the same time, I think that the focus was so on building the two characters and the relationship between Becky and Dylan that they couldn't put that part into them, and that's a frequent occurrence in many romantic comedies, I think, romantic comedies or romantic dramas in general, you know. I can see where your flaw is, but I still really like this movie because it's done really, really well. I find that it escapes a lot of the romantic, the romance movies genre things that they usually would do, and really, you know, focuses on communication, and instead of like, oh, initial hatred, they have to hate each other, and then they have to start liking each other, and then there's some hardship that comes between them, and then, you know, they're like, oh, now we're together again, yay, you know?
Yeah, and yeah, you just made a great statement all the way through there, but I still feel, and I'm glad I watched it, because it is experimental, and it does have some challenging moments, but at the same time, I feel it's a stripped down story, and I'm just echoing what you said at the very beginning. It is just a romance, and they're not interested in any of the sci-fi. They're not interested in the larger conflicts or the repercussions. It's just about, you know, two people who should be together but who are far apart, and how can they get together? And I guess for that, I can appreciate that. Even though I'm coming down on the story, I don't want to take away from the fact that the two leads are really well cast, and they're so natural, and I really like Zoe Kazan. She is so she's a plain Jane girl, but she's fun to look at, she's fun to listen to, she's very entertaining, and I don't know Michael Saul David at all. I never had seen him.
You do know Michael Saul David.
I do know him from what? Where do I know him from?
Cloverfield.
Oh, right, he was in Cloverfield, that's right, yes. I forgot about that movie, too. He was the star of that show, right, yes.
Michael Saul David is just incredibly adorable.
Yeah, he's just...
He's so adorably cute, and he is so clueless in so many ways.
Right.
And for someone who is, like, a thief and is incredibly smart as a thief, because he does lock breaking and all that, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he is like the most socially awkward person, and right. It makes this, it really elevates this character, because they're both in a certain way pretty socially awkward.
Mm-hmm.
They have, you know, they both have a side of themselves that they can't really, you know, they try to hide a little bit.
Yeah.
And they are, I think that's the main appeal of this, is that they cast the two wonderful characters, which really pulled off their natural roles really, really well. And right. Like you said, that you call them charismatic. They are incredibly charismatic. And it is a rare occasion that you don't see a very forced romance relationship and role, especially nowadays. I find I haven't appreciated a romance movie in quite a while, you know, and right. This one still remains one of the top ones in the near past.
Yeah, and the thing about the story is it's for me, it's double-edged. Like, the first, the bad part is that I, in some ways, I wish that they had just done away with the whole conceit of the telekinesis and it was just an actual story about two people meeting, because they spend almost the entirety of the film without actually being together. And that is the other side of the sword, which is that it actually, because they can't be together, it kind of takes away from the expectations that we normally get from these kinds of films. Like you said before, like, the whole physical aspect is taken away, and there is actually a very kind of refreshing physical romance that happens between the two of them, that even though they're not even to get in the same room together, they explore each other. And I found that was, yeah, and, you know, looking in the mirror, when they look in the mirror, they can see each other, of course, and I thought that, well, that's an interesting way to explore a relationship without having falling into the standard tropes of the romance genre. And I thought that was pretty clever. I just had wished that other parts were as clever as it went through. So, all right. So let's get to the end. For In Your Eyes, out of 5 stars, Kim, how many stars are you going to give it?
4 stars.
I'm going to give it 2.5. Thanks for subscribing. For more reviews and daily posts, head on over to our website, thatmomentin.com.